Chapter 18. Used and Discarded. After the ceremonies, Mrs. Warner took care of all the travel arrangements. Before Buck knew it, they were heading back across the Rockies, bound for New York. This time he shared a private car with Allison and Mrs. Warner. She never let him call her Brenda, even late at night when they became one creature. This was her way of keeping Buck in his place. He was simply a thing of pleasure to her and nothing more. She was not looking for love or romance, just someone to help satisfy her own lustful cravings. It did not matter to Buck as long as she kept offering her body and paying his way. He figured as soon as he got them safely back to New York, she would send him packing. With his pay, he could then make his way back down to Texas and work another cattle drive with Bob. Buck enjoyed the idea of being a real cowboy again, and now that he knew how to please a woman, Saturday night trips into town would take on a completely different meaning. They made good time, and soon they were approaching the Ohio border. Buck's heart almost stopped when he remembered that a double murder still hung over his head there. Luckily, they traveled across Ohio at night and had no reason to get off the train. Black porters brought their meals to the private car on silver trays, and it had its own bathroom. Even though this ride had been rather pleasant, Buck was glad that this trip was nearing its end. If he spent much more time living this rich lifestyle, a smoky bunkhouse filled with snoring cowboys would be hard to take. At least there, the men treated him as an equal, and not just some wealthy woman's plaything. This experience had given him a little better understanding as to why the tavern whores drank so heavily. When the train arrived in New York, Mrs. Warner again took complete control. She ordered her baggage delivered to a waiting carriage and then tipped the three black porters that had been at her beck and call. When the carriage arrived at the Warner home, about 20 minutes later, she casually handed Buck a roll of money, then dismissed him with a slight wave of her hand without as much as a thank you. She and Allison then walked up the marble steps into her house and disappeared through the massive oak doors. Her house servant scurried along behind her with the luggage. Buck now stood on the sidewalk alone. Looking down at the money in his hand, Buck now felt somewhat used and had to face the fact that he had been no more than a temporary distraction for her amusement. She had felt nothing for him, and Buck had to admit that seeing the last of her was not going to upset him that much. The only time Mrs. Warner spoke kindly to him was when she wanted his services in her bed. The rest of the time she had snapped orders at him just as she had done poor old Mr. Warner. Murray Hill, where her home was located, was an affluent neighborhood in Midtown Manhattan near the Central Railway Station. Unlike the rest of the city, Murray Hill's streets were clean and the homes were all well maintained. To an outsider, much of New York appeared to be one big frightening slum. This city appeared to be the very center of vice and debauchery. Rows of tenement houses reeked with filth. Yet to those poor folks living there, this was a thriving working-class neighborhood and the only home most of them would ever know. Buck, however, longed for the fresh air of the countryside or open prairie. These crowded streets reminded him too much of the cow pens of Abilene, and he had no desire to become part of this herd. Buck caught the next train heading west. New York was no place for a cowboy, even a pretend one. Whichever way his life played itself out, he would not be in the smothering confines of a crowded eastern city. On the ride back to the station, Buck checked the roll of money that he still held so casually. Apparently, his sexual abilities had been better than he had realized. A quick inventory revealed $200 in 20s. It was rather ironic. He had made as much money in this short time giving a woman pleasure as his father had working his entire life in the dirt. Money-wise, Buck was back to where he had started the year before. Now, though, he was not some scared little farm boy. The past year had hardened him, and he had shot up like a weed. Buck could now ride, rope, shoot, drink, and service a woman with the best cowhands. He doubted his own parents would have recognized him, if they were still alive. The painful memory of their passing came rushing back, and he had to fight the urge to cry. Buck also remembered the promise that he had made to place proper markers on their graves. This train would be traveling through Wilsonville on the way back west. He could secretly arrange to have the markers placed. His only concern was the law. Having no desire to dance at the end of a rope for his past misdeeds, Buck exited the train one town east of Wilsonville. There he arranged for the carving of the headstones and their placement. He dare not risk making a personal appearance in Wilsonville. With that last detail taken care of, there would be no need for him to venture to this side of the Mississippi ever again. Once back out west, he intended to live out his days under the warm western sky. A small ranch or farm would be all he needed, and maybe a woman to sit with on the front porch. Who knows, perhaps a bunch of kids as well. Buck had it all planned out, but life does not always cooperate with one's dreams. Besides, he still had a lot of growing to do before he'd be ready for that rocker on the front porch. He breathed a sigh of relief when the train exited the Ohio border the next day. Buck had skipped the meal stop at Wilsonville, opting instead to slouch down under his hat and pretend to be asleep. He dared not chance any of the town folk seeing him. It would be his luck to run into Big Mike if he set one foot off the train. Buck could imagine the blood-curdling cry of alarm and the ensuing lynch party. He would just as soon avoid that little get-together. With Ohio fading into the distance, Buck concentrated on what lay ahead. He was napping when the sound of a familiar voice woke him. It took a few seconds for his mind to pinpoint the rugged face that went with that familiar Texas drawl. Hank Rhodes had boarded at one of the stops and was now bending the ear of one of his fellow passengers with tales of the Wild West. A smile crept across Buck's face as he listened to Hank tell almost the exact same stories he had told Buck the year before. Buck could not stop himself from a little mischief. Disguising his voice as best he could, Buck said from under his hat,
"Why don't you hold down the noise, old man? Some of us road men are trying to sleep."
Before Buck could sit up straight in his seat, Hank was standing over him with his fists balled tight and his jaws set. Keeping his hat pulled over his eyes and his head tilted slightly toward the floor, Buck asked in his own voice,
"You wouldn't hit a partner, would you, cowboy?"
After a moment of stunned silence, Hank let out a big belly laugh, then snatched Buck to his feet and hugged him as if he was Hank's long-lost son. He then held Buck at arm's length and said,
"Buck, I was fixing to take your damn fool head off."
"Now that's pretty big talk for an old dirt farmer."
"I'll show you who's an old dirt farmer."
As he grabbed Buck in a headlock,
I give.
"You damn sight better. I've killed white men for less than that kind of insult. What the hell you doing back east, Buck?"
After they both flopped back down in the seat,
"It's a long story."
"Well, start telling her then, son."
As he leaned back and relaxed, the two friends talked most of the night. Buck told Hank of his adventures, and then Hank told how he had lost nearly all his money in a big poker game. He was heading back to the ranch and asked if Buck wanted to join him. The money from the widow was not enough to buy much of a spread, so Buck said that he would give the Longhorns one more chance to kill him. This old world can be a cold and lonesome place at times. Being with a friend again sure felt good.